We're listening to the lovely and familiar Barcarolle, music of Jacques Offenbach, that will be performed in the first part of the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra's next concert. And it's a big one. Gregory Voida is back to tell us just what's going on. We've got this lovely familiar tune and something huge in the next part of it.
Yeah, we were just saying that we're probably competing for the most notes played in a three-week period, since we just concluded a very successful John Williams concert. And
that was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And as everybody knows, at least musicians do, there's a lot of notes to play in there. So really, like, just by counting them. And of course, it's, you know, it's technically demanding for the orchestra. And Wagner is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very rich orchestral texture and really just a lot to play.
I was thinking that if you enjoyed the John Williams concert, as I did, you'd probably enjoy the Wagner too, because it is very cinematic and there's a big story to tell.
Well, Wagner is definitely, you know, the greatest movie composer from before the era of,
mm-hmm.
of film. Because his music is very evocative and very visual, and of course the stories and the way they're told in a dramatic way are also, you know, remind you of what you see when you were watching a drama in the movie theater.
But the concert begins with this lovely piece that I think that's been used in like a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup commercial.
It's very familiar. Was it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The Barcarolle by Jacques Offenbach from the Tales of Hoffmann. And that's another lively piece that people are familiar with. Oh, I have to stop myself from calling it Orphans in Their Underwear. It's Orpheus in the Underworld. But yeah, tell me about that's what classical music announcers call it. I'm not kidding. But I have to always stop myself. But the overture from Orpheus in the Underworld, the lovely can-can music. So what does Jacques Offenbach have to do with Richard Wagner?
The idea of the concert is, of course, coming from the idea of Lorin Maazel, who constructed this, The Ring Without Words, using music by Richard Wagner from the entire Ring cycle, which consists of four operas and takes hours and hours and hours and hours and hours to play.
Days, yes.
And days, yeah. Yes. If you take a break, then mm-hmm. it takes days. And then I was thinking, like, what what else could we do that is also somehow from the stage, was written for voices and orchestra, but can be performed with no singers? And then Jacques Offenbach came to mind, who was a contemporary of Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like the contrast between his, you know, light French operetta.
Belle Époque stuff.
Yeah, music. And you know, make the audience realize that while this Richard guy was living at the same time when this Jacques guy was living, and they were writing completely different music, and you know, they're both valid and they work fantastically for the stage, and of course they are, you know, they're melodies that everybody recognizes, not only the can-can but also this melody that we just heard. The Tears of Hoffmann is a very interesting opera, by the way. I think we can call it an opera, everybody does, and not really an operetta or the light opera. It's nothing else, just short stories, kind of spooky stories one after another. And this character, Hoffmann, whose character is loosely based on the author of the original stories, is actually just telling us a story in a pub. That's what's happening. So mm-hmm. he would sing an aria, and then he would talk about a story, and then we see the story happening.
And that's where the Nutcracker came from.
Yes, exactly. And the other, you know, story or stories is something that Wagner himself created out of German and Nordic, you know, legends and mythology, and turned it into this. Well, I mean, it's something new what we see and hear with Wagner here. He had no formal education in music. He learned it on his own. He wrote his own librettos for his own operas. He worked on this cycle for over 20 years.
Wow.
And the idea was to build a theater in Bayreuth just for this cycle, the Ring cycle. Play it once and then burn it down to the ground.
Uh-huh.
So you get a sense how romantic and you know, just
nutty.
Extreme. Well, you can call it that way. You can call it that. And indeed, there is some kind of, you know, just craziness about it. The way he the way he works on this for so long and the way how this whole thing comes together at the end. I mean, why I love this rendering of the Ring Cycle by Laurie Mazel is because you actually get to hear how melodies and themes come back. You know, if you want to actually realize or remember that in the last part or in Siegfried, some stuff comes back from the very first part, an introduction, then you have to, you know, sit next to the Mad Broadcast or the TV or the DVD player or the CD player for days, and who can do this, right? But if you can listen to it in about 70 minutes and these melodies come back in different forms, that really just sheds light on how Wagner was thinking about music and how he used his so-called leitmotifs, these leading mm-hmm. motives of music to characterize people and to put you in the situation and to make you understand with words and music at the same time what is exactly happening.
Another very evocative piece of music, and people again may associate it not necessarily with Wagner and the opera, but maybe the movie Apocalypse Now with the helicopters,
and many other movies. Yes. Of course, I mean it's really this is the Ride of the Valkyries, mm-hmm. written for that scene where these Amazons, these fighter women, are kind of flying and riding high and just like jumping. I saw one production once when they had dancers. Singers, I mean, there are a lot of, soprano singers. These Valkyries are all sopranos. So they were also on stage and dressed the same way. There were dancers that were just bouncing behind the set. So you could see, like, women flying in the air. It was
they
great.
They need to be on horseback. So.
it's like a horse riding music, of course, and uh-huh. that's why it's so popular with you know, anything where you have speed and you get
power.
This power and you know, open sky and things like that.
It's a really interesting story behind this work. It's 70 minutes long, which is why you don't hear it on WLRH very often, because I don't have 70 minutes. But Laurie Mazel was actually inspired by Richard Wagner's grandson. He was sitting in the theater with him and was enjoying the music. And he actually said to Laurie Mazel that the orchestra, that's where it is, the text behind the text, the universal subconscious that binds Wagner's persona one to the other, to the proto-ego of the legend, or something to that effect, is what he said. So it was actually his idea to do it. And then he was approached, Laurie Mazel was approached by Telarc, the record label, to do this. So where would he even, you're a composer, where would you even start with this?
Well, you know, Wagner gives you a pretty good blueprint with his music, or if you read the story, you get the main characters and you get the music of the main characters, and of course you try to incorporate everything that is popular for a very good reason, like what we just heard, the Ride of the Valkyries, or the music from Siegfried, where that we all know from Siegfried, Idol, the mm-hmm. the short serenade version that Wagner wrote for the birth of his son, whose name was Siegfried, you know, all these popular and well-known pieces of orchestral music are being played separately as orchestral pieces mm-hmm. in the concert repertoire. But to take these and take some of the other themes and calls and leitmotifs from the piece and kind of put them in chronological order, that makes a whole lot of sense. And that's where I would start. I would just look at all the main characters, the main themes, and that's exactly what Mazel is doing. And the great thing, the really great accomplishment he has here is that he made this into like a constant stream of music of 70 minutes. So there is barely any closure in the middle of. Sometimes it finishes, but then it immediately goes to the next piece of music, and it's very smoothly done. So you can't really tell that it wasn't written in this way originally.
Yeah, a reviewer in the New York Times said that this job that Lauren Mazel agreed to was that of a Hollywood scriptwriter asked to turn a complicated novel into a 2-hour screenplay. And they said his solutions were sensible. It makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it has all the powerful stuff in it. It's really a great great editing work, if I may say so. And also, I mean, Lauren Mazel has conducted, you know, all the Wagner operas. So, mm-hmm. so he has a deep knowledge about it. And so it is true. It is true to Wagner, and it's true to the story. It's true to the original.
Also, this critic in the New York Times says the music makes heavy demands on an orchestra.
It sure does. Almost as heavy as John Williams.
Yeah. So do you approach this work differently than you would, say, the Jacques Offenbach? I mean, how do you train for this event, if you were like an athlete would?
Yes. I mean, you have to somehow manage the rehearsals to lead up to the performance. And it happens in a very different way with different styles and different type of music. Like, this is long and hard and heavy and lots of notes and lots of places, spots in the music that you need to practice many times, but you still need to be able to manage to play it through at least twice for mm-hmm. dress rehearsal and for the concert. So for that what I do is we just start playing it and get an idea how it runs, you know, with all these musicians. We have a lot of extra musicians on stage, by the way. And then to give everybody a sense of what it's going to be like in a couple of days at the day of the concert. Mm-hmm. Because you just got to prepare yourself as a performer for that. You know, when you go home and open your fridge and you decide if you want to take the beer or the milk out of your fridge, you have to think about what's ahead of you.
Yeah.
That you're about to play amazing music. I mean, every note is amazing that we're playing, but it is a monster. I mean, it is long and difficult, and you gotta get ready for it.
So why are you programming it this way? Why are you playing it now? What made you think this was a good idea?
I don't know. I just thought we ought to play some Wagner, and you know, I mean, it's done often then, you know, these so-called concert pieces or you know, like these shorter things that can be part of a concert program, popular things like the Tristan Prelude and Liebestod. You can play them together. It's practically the beginning at the end of the opera, right? And they are being played that way, but to give something to the audience like this, where you actually really get to hear the whole thing, kind of the Reader's Digest version of the Ring Cycle. I think it's a really great journey just to try to do that and get the whole experience in you know, in a nutshell.
That's one of the things I enjoyed about the John Williams concert. Even though I had seen just about all of the movies, I found out I didn't really need the movies. The music just stood on its own. It was amazing enough, even without the inflatable dinosaurs.
Well, we don't have any inflatable dinosaurs for the Wagner concert, I can tell you that.
Not an inflatable Brunhilde.
Perhaps. No singers. See, that's the other thing is Wagner is hard to program for symphony orchestras because being a Wagner singer is something completely different from being a singer and mm-hmm. seeing anything else in the opera world.
They're like superheroes.
They're superheroes and they, you know, they mostly just sing this because they're trained for it, because they have the voice that is required to be able to sing for hours and really difficult parts. These are not easy roles to sing. So mostly so-called Wagner singers don't really sing anything else but Wagner all their lives. Presenting the orchestral texture, apparently now, as I learned it from you, based on the idea of Lauren Mazel's grandson.
Richard Wagner's grandson.
Oh, Richard Wagner's grandson.
Yes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, it's right here in the
wow.
notes.
Wow, okay. I'm taking this quote home.
You may have that, yes.
Thank you. to just kind of show and preserve that amazing work, the texture, the you know, what really makes these operas, the orchestral richness to it, to show that without, like, if I may put it this way, the distraction of the stage action, just the music itself. I think it's something that is really important, and it kind of gives you an insight into what a composer like Wagner was doing here. One word about the orchestration, because I think that this shows what a genius Wagner was. You know, he learned how to orchestrate by apparently sitting next to each and every musician in the orchestra. That means the last stand of the viola section he started, and then he would go the stand before that, and then proceed to the first stand, and then go back to the second violin and do this with everybody, to learn how to orchestrate and to learn what, why do you need a violist, a six violist, you know, why don't you just do it with four, or what's the difference between eight and six? And then he would be listening to the French horns and the tuba, and after a while he decided, well, something is missing here. You know, this type of sound that the tuba plays and the type of sound that the French horn plays, they blend so well together, but there is a range missing in between the two instruments. And that's how Wagner tubas became, that's how they were invented, based on his ideas, that he went to this guy and said, okay, look, I want smaller tubas that kind of sounds like sound like French horns, because I want this... I have this, you know, idea that there should be a family of instruments that have the same sound color. And so we actually have four Wagner tubas, two tenor and two bass Wagner tubas on stage.
What do they look like?
They look like small tubas,
okay.
Really. They are played with a horn mouthpiece. So the mouthpiece that the musicians put to their lips to create the sound are the same size as of a... of a French horn. Now, on the lower Wagner tuba is more like a trombone mouthpiece. So it really is in between low brass and like this mid-range brass that is the French horn. And, you know, bass trombone, which is a lower version of the trombone, and bass trumpet, which was very new back then. It's a very interesting sound color as well. It sounds an octave or more lower than a normal trumpet, but it does have a sound of a trumpet.
Interesting percussion in there as well.
Yeah, talking about some unusual instruments. It's anvils, and the reason for that is because these Nibelungs underground are making the gold ring that's in the middle of the story out of the gold of River Rhine, and they're just beating on these anvils as they're working.
I've seen
little
anvils.
Tiny anvils.
Yeah,
yes,
like that.
Yeah. so originally, when you're watching this on stage, of course, this is played by the chorus members that are singing, or the actors that are playing the Nibelungs, and they have to actually play it on stage on real anvils. That's mm-hmm. the original idea, and this is also part of this this orchestral version of the Ring, and provides another example of how, you know, you have this fantastic idea of, okay, I'm going to turn this sound, this industrial sound, into orchestral music, and the way it kind of just comes out of the orchestral texture and then again goes back into it, and then the story continues. I think that's one of among the greatest moments of this opera cycle.
And again, you don't necessarily have to have the visuals; they're there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Musically.
Exactly. You can hear it.
The concert begins at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. Wagner Without Words. It's a big, long piece. Do you like work out or lift weights or anything to get ready for it?
Yeah. Well, don't ask me what I do afterwards. But yes. You actually have to pace yourself. That's for sure. Especially considering that we have so many rehearsals in just a few days, and then you have to do the dress rehearsal the same day and the concert that evening, and there is a pre-concert talk and all that kind of stuff. So you got to work your brain to be able to just concentrate when it's really needed.
And speaking of rehearsals, there will be an open rehearsal. It's Saturday morning at 11. You can just walk in, and you don't have to sit for the whole 70 minutes, but you can get an idea, see what the Wagner tuba looks like, and then see the little percussion instruments, the little teeny tiny anvils.
We're going to put them downstage, so uh-huh. you will be able to see them.
And see how Gregory Voita works with the members of the orchestra. To me, that's fascinating.
It is. It is. I think once you know and once you love orchestral music, live orchestral music, and even if you don't know it, maybe it's even better if you don't know it, and you come there and you realize what is happening actually behind the scenes before we let the audience into the VBC to listen to a concert. And you learn a whole lot about how orchestra musicians and conductors and singers and soloists prepare for an actual performance. And sometimes you get to hear something twice or three times, mm-hmm. depending on the need. If we have to play it again, then we're going to do it. For the open dress rehearsal, we're going to start with the Wagner. So we're going to play it through 70 minutes, then take a break, make corrections if needed, and then end with the Jacques Offenbach pieces. You know, the concert is a little bit lopsided. The first half is only about 20 minutes, or maybe 18, and the second half is 70. So we have a light first half, and then we have this masterwork in the second half, which is just a great musical journey.
And also Opus Tadpole is at 10:15. The trumpet is the featured instrument there, so your kids can get up close and personal. Anything else you want to hear from Wagner Without Words before?
Well, my favorite is actually the Funeral March, which is among the most powerful musical pieces ever written in music history, I believe.
So much power and emotion there.
And those sound colors, you know, mm-hmm. with the low brass and the timpani, and just amazing imagination. And if you're ready for, you know, an amazing journey, then come and listen to it, because it really is something else. And you don't hear all this great music all in once in, you know, a little bit over an hour and all these great excerpts from the Ring cycle.
Gregory Voita, anything you want to add before you go take a nap or whatever you need to get ready for this?
I'm actually going to go back to study the score some more, because there's so many notes mm-hmm. to learn and to discover, even last minute. It's, you know, I'm really looking forward to this concert, and yes, there is a strong connection between Wagner and John Williams. You know, that's why we love that music so much, because it's coming from this great, rich tradition of orchestra music with all the colors and the powerful music that can be created with a live orchestra on stage. We're going to have a lot of musicians on stage, so just be ready.